Alright, so the reason I'm recording it is because we're actually going to try and pull some excerpts out and put it on a blog or something along here. So, and maybe we'll even transcribe it and try to remember what we actually said. Just,
yeah.
I'm going to try to listen to what Joel says anyway. Alright, so.
What you say, for sure.
So I am an estate planning attorney, and I've been working with trusts and that sort of thing, and it's clear from the new act that some of the trusts that I wrote for clients probably ought to be revised. And so as we started thinking about what's, you know, that could happen to all of us, right? All of our clients may be in that situation where they have a trust, and we'll talk more about some of where that comes into play, that what we used to think about changes every year whenever new legislation comes along. But this act is kind of important, so we want to make sure we had a chance to go through it. I do different kinds of trusts. My focus is on families with dementia or Alzheimer's. And the reason for that is because that's in my family too, and so I've grown accustomed to working with people with Alzheimer's. And I am really patient. So they can ask me the same question 1,000 times.
That's interesting. You know, we're going to have to talk about it.
I'd be happy to. I mean, it's like become like a passion to work with that group.
Yeah.
I also do VA benefits, even though I wasn't a vet myself. My dad was in the Navy, and so it's another way to give back to that world. I grew up during Vietnam, so there was no way I was volunteering, even though Dad said, no, you must. It's your civic duty. I said, yeah, there's this nice place in Canada that's calling my name.
My dad was ready to send me.
Yeah. To protect you. Yeah. No, mine was throwing me into the fray.
Luckily, my lotto number was 247.
Ah, well, that solved the problem, yeah. So I also graduated thinking I was going to be an engineer or something else, and I ended up being a lawyer. There's more to that story, which we can talk about at a different time. Oh, and I'd like to point out that I'm also a grandfather. Hey, want to see pictures? All right, Joel, your turn.
Well, I started in New York, if you couldn't tell by what they tell me is an accent. I worked for a couple of major firms in Manhattan for a while, but quickly realized I left for work and the kids would be asleep. I came home and they'd be asleep, and so we moved to Florida, and when I moved to Florida in 79, it was empty. There was no one there. It was wonderful. I built a few practices up there. I did a stint as a CFO for a large manufacturer, which really gave me some great experience. Instead of the typical accountant looking from the outside in, I was actually on the inside. And I was managing 120 people and salesmen all over the world. And it was pretty cool to pick up the phone and transfer $10 million on my word. That felt pretty good. But I couldn't take the backstabbing in a private company. I'm a straight shooter, and they were beating the crap out of me, and it was not comfortable. So I went back to what I know, and I started a practice in Boca Raton, which I worked from 94 until I moved here in 06. And I sold the practice in Florida, moved here, started from scratch, and here I am in Chapel Hill. And I got my master's in tax, and have a PFS designation, which is personal financial specialist and chartered financial global accountant. My wife just loves all the initials after my name. And I have two kids and four grandkids, and one of them is graduating high school this year. And so I'm looking to college, which is pretty interesting.
For the grandkids,
yeah. And are you kidding? I took my grandkid, I said, I want to stay here. You know, I want to go back to college, knowing what I know now. But I mostly work with small businesses and individuals. I have a consultative practice. I do not do any financial statements. I do a whole lot of business and tax planning and tax preparation, you know, and I focus on trying to give the clients personal service and be responsive to their needs. And You know, and it always gets me when I pick up a new client. I'm always asking them, why are you leaving your current profession? 9 times out of 10, it's because it takes 3 phone calls and 2 emails to get a response. I feel like I'm in the service business if I can't provide service when I need you. There are a few other CPAs out there. So anyway, that's my story. And Chapel Hill's been fun. I enjoy it. I love this area.
So both of us have clients as well as vendors that mm-hmm. work that we want to work with, so that's it's a great mix of people today.
Yep.
Okay, so your turn. Again, you're going to continue to hold the stage here for a while.
Well, I mean, yeah, this will take a long time. I mean, what's significant, I mean, to me, looking at this, you know, a vote of 417-3, and it just came in, as usual, it passed at the ninth hour. 11th hour, whatever you call it, and it's effective January 1, and on the surface, you know, it doesn't seem to do too much, but when you look underneath, there's a whole lot of stuff that it is affecting, and as Doug alluded to, I mean, a lot of planning that was done in the past really needs to be revisited under this law. You know, and it won't affect everybody, but there are some people that will affect. You know, it's kind of like I do a whole seminar, and people that I do it to, they laugh. It's called "It Depends," because the answer to every tax question is "It Depends," because what could be good for someone could be disastrous for someone else. So, all right. So, a couple of the things that it does. It raises the age for the required minimum distributions from 70.5 to 72. As you advisors know, the life expectancy tables have increased tremendously over the past few years, so this is long overdue. Whether it's enough, who knows, but at least it's something. And, you know, if you are already taking your RMDs, you need to continue doing so. But if you're, I forget exactly what the cutoff is, but as of 2020, you will go to the 72, so you'll get a little reprieve from that. Second thing, it allows lifelong contributions to IRAs. And what that means is, it used to be when you got to 70, you couldn't make any additional contributions. As long as you're working now and you have earned income, you can still make contributions to IRAs, which, you know, makes sense. Someone said, "Well, why not?" And this one is pretty cool. You know, if you have an IRA and you just had a baby, you can take $5,000 out of the IRA penalty-free, or 401k penalty-free. You still pay tax on it, but you don't pay the penalty.
That
would
be so helpful 3 years ago.
Timing is everything.
That was so true.
5, 8, and 16.
So one of the biggest change is, and I'm sure you advisors are very aware of this, you know, the stretch IRA has been a wonderful technique to, you know, kind of defer tax on IRA disbursements. Well, now they come up and they say you have to liquidate the IRA within 10 years, okay, if you're a non-spouse. Now, you're going to ask, well, how do you have to take it out? You don't have to take one dime out until the year 10, but by the 10th year, you have to take it all out. So that kind of brings in a couple of other planning strategies. As we were talking about the other day, you know, conversion of Roth into regular into Roth, you know, maybe you control these disbursements so you keep your bracket down so it pays to do a rollover. You know, so as with everything, you know, any of the laws always bring opportunity. You just have to read between the lines and kind of figure out what strategies work for you and your clients. In your case, for you and you. And there are some exceptions for these beneficiaries, and you can see them right there: the minor child, the disabled, chronically ill, and an individual who's not more than 10 years younger than the account owner. So there are some exceptions for the 10 years, but again, I think that, you know, while While it's, you know, they're going to collect the tax within 10 years instead of maybe 30 or 40, it still provides some opportunities to do some planning.
The GAO computed how much they were going to gain. Wasn't it like an enormous amount of money?
Oh, it's got to be. I mean, think about it. I have clients in their 20s and 30s collecting IRAs that were getting $200 a year or $400 a year, you know. So, yeah, that's going to be significant. Now, instead of $400 a year, they may get $4,000 a year or more, $10,000
a year. And the IRS gets extra tax on all their income now.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's how they're going to pay for all this. So, all right.
All right.
And
so,
up to you, Doug.
All right. So, a lot of the trusts that we would write for people are basically family revocable trusts, living trusts. The goal was to manage the assets for family members, for either, you know, very often for families with second marriages or children that needed extra, little extra special care. Like, I also use trusts a lot for property that's out of state because it didn't, and probate avoidance in general. But there's this other whole area of trust, which is allowing the money to flow through the trust from an IRA, because the IRAs aren't necessarily as directable as the trust can be, and so we could push the money through the IRA into the hands of the beneficiaries through the trust rules. And so that was the conduit trust approach. There are a couple of rules. One of the things is you have to be able to actually see all the people's names. So we couldn't write a trust to the grandchildren because we don't know who the grandchildren are, but we could write it to a list of grandchildren. And then we could amend the trust later if there were new grandchildren. But still, the point was that we can find a way to direct it. And so that's often how it was used. The problem now, because of the fact that we have this new SECURE Act, is that we can't allow that trust to hold the money for 25 years because it falls under these new rules and has to go out in 10 years, even if it comes through a trust. So that's where you all get into the tax questions. And while probably not all of our trusts are conduit-style trusts, most of them are. So I'm sort of going back through and figuring out who has IRAs of my old clients that is going to be affected by this. So this is one of the early seminars that we're trying to reach out and see, you know, who is going to come into play. But I wanted to make sure that we reached out to you guys also, because I think we're going to need to have help, right? When I bring somebody in and I say, you're going to be affected, right? Where am I going to send them? I need to point them at a financial advisor or a CPA.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the most benefit to having a conduit trust being the beneficiary of an IRA within the rules versus just direct? Is it like a special needs trust, or are there other scenarios where it would make sense to maintain that conduit trust under the new rules?
There are some scenarios. We actually have a couple of those.
That's
okay. I mean, so it's we'll get there, I think, and if we don't, ask again, and I'll try to answer it better. You know, wait till the next slide isn't really a very good answer, but it's
Stay tuned.
So the answer to your question is it depends.
So apropos.
So anyway, that's one of the biggest problems with the new provisions, and that means then not only are there taxes, but also that control now comes in the hands of this beneficiary that we don't want them to control because they're not capable or they need protection, and that special needs trust certainly fits into that category. So this becomes that trade-off then. Are we worried about more about protection, or are we worried more about taxes? And unfortunately, it may turn out to be a one or the other type of question. But that's where we have to work with advisors and others. So this is some of the, we're going to talk about these a little bit more. These are some of the alternatives to conduit. So I think a lot of cases can still use the conduit approach, because if you're not worried about the 10 years, then it doesn't matter. But instead of doing conduit trust, maybe some sort of accumulation trust works, and we accept the fact that there's going to be taxes paid, but we can let the trust accumulate, whereas the conduit has to pay all of the income out, that accumulation trusts can collect that income, apply it to principal, continue to make investments, but there's going to be the tax consequence. And as you know, trusts, well, you probably know, you guys may or may not know, trusts are a ridiculously high tax rate under the new tax law from 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the first, I don't have a chart for that, I don't think, but the first 26,000 or something? Or?
I don't think, I think it's only 13,000, you hit 37%.
So bracket. Basically any income in the trust is horribly taxed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we want to keep the income out of the trust. So there are some ways that you could do that. One of them is, another way is, and we'll talk about each of these in a little more detail. Another one is that life insurance trust, and the third way that Joel's going to talk about is the charitable trusts. And there's various versions of all these things, and we can get into more detail. This accumulation trust really is aimed at those retirement accounts, and it makes sure that what we have in a retirement account is for that account, so we can write specific rules for specific kinds of income, right? So if an IRA is paying into the trust, the accumulation trust can recognize that it's IRA income distributions that can be handled differently from other investments the trust might have. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
I see you processing, so
I hear my wheels turning. Yeah. So accumulation trust is, for lack of a better term, a conduit for RMDs. Is that what I'm seeing? Required distributions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. But not the real conduit, because the conduit implies pass-through. Yeah. So I'm going to go back to this picture. The conduit here is just it flows in from the IRA and right out through the trust. The trustee can't hold the money. Whereas the accumulation option, he or she can hold the money.
Would a trustee IRA be an alternative?
Tell me more about trustee IRA.
If I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to remember if they had it when I was at Jones. I know we had it at Merrill. It was essentially just an IRA that was, I didn't do any of them, but I had you had to fill out a form, and it essentially had a trustee at Merrill act as kind of a custodian on the trust for a fee.
I think it's a great strategy if you want to make a fee, but I don't think it helps here.
Okay.
Because I'm not really sure what
we'll look it up.
I'm not sure what that does. There may be some provisions in it that I don't understand.
The key component was just control of the money.
Yeah,
that taxes, it was just, yeah.
Right, and so that's where that trade-off comes into play, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to decide if you're trying to protect the beneficiary long-term or if you're trying to avoid taxes.
All right, I'll check on that. A long time, sorry.
Yeah, so accumulation trusts are probably more oriented at protecting the beneficiary. I've got a little chart that shows the different kinds of trusts and what the best fit is.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, so
I feel so.
You should have made that a handout, right? Right, I think this whole conversation is really oriented around people who are close to that 70 age and are thinking about, how am I going to structure my investments or my life insurance or whatever in order to accommodate the next few years. You're right.
Okay.
And I realized, and that's the last time you're going to hear anything about my kids, because I'm recording this.
You're being authentic, Doug.
Yeah. Yes.
I appreciate it.
I'll put it on pause. I may have to say, off the record,
bleep.
Yeah, you're listening to this later, and there's certain bits and pieces.
Yeah,
there's 17 seconds missing from the tape.
18-minute gap with 11 overwrites. Oh, wait. And you don't know, that was Nixon, by the way.
Rosemary Woods. Rosemary Woods.
Oh, yeah. All right, so the next approach that generally that we're beginning to think through now is whether a life insurance trust makes more sense to do. And one of the things, so this is a little hard to articulate because the idea of a life insurance trust suggests that you're deceased, right? So does that mean, so when does this come into play? Because you're obviously not deceased if you're worried about this IRA coming in for the kids, but it's really, it's the parent, right? So we're going to put life insurance on me to pay into the trust, because when I die, that's when the RMD begins to be an issue for the kids because they can't stretch it anymore. So by buying a life insurance policy to cover the taxes, we can kind of offset that problem. And there are specific kinds of trusts that handle life insurance. Life insurance can be paid into a trust, a regular accumulation trust, to cover that. We can also create a specific life insurance trust. They're not that much different, but I think the key is going to be whether it's a grantor trust or a non-grantor trust, and whether or not the taxes or the assets are includable in your estate. Is that, so you guys know all this probably better than I do. But I am saying these trusts exist, and these are options for what used to be the conduit trust. Now I'm going to switch over to Joel, because he is going to talk about charitable remainder trusts, and he's got a real-life example, which he's not going to use names with.
Well, Jessica knows the names. I was sitting with a client the other day, a charitable remainder trust is a great way to put appreciated assets, to use appreciated assets to not only avoid tax on the gain, but also allow significant tax deductions and income to the donor during the life, the beneficiaries. So it was Jessica's client that has a nice position and a very popular stock, and if she sells it, there'd be gigantic tax ramifications. But if she gives it to a charitable remainder trust, the trust can sell it, there's no tax, and set up an annuity to pay her client a nice income the rest of her life, and she can also take a nice tax deduction.
There's the key, rest of her life.
That's right.
Because instead of 10 years now, you're allowing, because of the CRT, you're allowing it to flow through the whole life.
And one of the aspects of it that has to be part of a trust, and her client said it to me first, is that philanthropically minded. Because if you're not, you are donated. This does go to the charity when you pass. So the money,
and you may not get as many dollars out of it as you would if you kept it and even paid the tax on it.
Right.
Because you might die sooner than you planned.
That's right. That's right. But I actually had, I've done it a few times. Not I've done it, but I've had clients that have used that a number of times, and it really works out very well.
Right. Can I rewind that? Because I want to make sure I understood you or heard you right. So if client A passes, let's say in a couple of years after making this large donation to the CRT, and they didn't really get a chance to take the full tax benefit, their heirs can carry that forward, or is it gone?
I believe it's gone.
Okay.
I believe it goes to the charity at that.
No, I don't mean the fund, but I meant the tax carryover.
The tax carryover should continue into the estate, shouldn't it?
No. No, it ends as a 1040. It ends at the 1040.
Well, that's good to know.
That's why I have the expert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and believe me, I've had people that have lost a lot. I mean, after the crash in 2000, I had my practice in Florida, had many senior citizens, you know, and I had some $500,000, $700,000, $800,000 carryover losses that are never going to be.
Well, then I have a great solution for that. I will be happy to sell a series of smaller and smaller term policies that will cover that whole time period. And you can get all your advantage back. That way, and term policies wouldn't be, depending on the person's age and health and all that stuff, of
yes.
course. But
I think in this case, it probably wouldn't apply, but I can see that for younger,
people better die when you want them to.
That's, an annuity is the opposite of life insurance, right? I mean, the longer you live, the more benefits you get,
All right, did I forget to say that I'm also licensed to sell insurance?
I am also, actually.
So.
And I'm sure we are, too.
Yeah,
I never will.
But you, so you can easily see, you know, how you would structure all that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
Okay, well, I ask if you have questions. I want to make sure we address things.
It's not really applicable, so I wasn't going to ask.
All right. Well, then I'll move on to the next charitable slide. So this is really about, well, I'll let you go.
Okay, well, the annuity basically, I mean, what it does is it mimics the stretch, as Doug said before, by allowing the money to be paid out over a lifetime rather than limited to the 10 years. And the, you know, you could have, you know, distributions of tax, some portion of principal, so not all of it would even be taxed. You know, so again, this is a way to kind of use a stretch without using a stretch, mm-hmm. which you can't use anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, once again, when new laws are passed, people figure out ways, so, we want to do this, how do we do it? Well, this is how you can do it.
Always had this as an option, but now it just seems...
Now it comes into play. It
seems more attractive because of the tax practice.
Correct.
So we also alluded to usually converting your assets into Roth IRA. So that's what he's going to talk about next. I'm going to back up this slide. This is the one I just, that Dan made copies of. But basically it's trying to say these are the situations in which we might use these different kinds of trusts. And it's partly because I lost my train of thought, sorry. I don't remember. It's hopeless.
Welcome to the club.
I know. But, you know, it's the problem is that in this slide, as I was putting it together, it's too similar. I don't think it really does enough to really differentiate the situation. So this is coming back to, you said, give me a real-life example. And I think what I'm going to do is make this a better set of examples. Because, right, how do I tell? They all say conduit trust.
Mm-hmm. I illustrate the story so that everybody understands, you know, where the best fit is.
Right.
Yeah, for sure.
So this is a learning process.
Absolutely.
For everybody.
We're all on the same journey.
Yep. All right. So these are the strategies that we are beginning to suggest to our clients now is to go back and fix the trusts. If you have a conduit trust, if I've done one or someone else, some other attorney has done one for you, then we need to look at their goals and see if it's tax, if it's planning, if it's some other reason, or if it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. because people may or may not have IRAs that they're worried about.
Right.
Although I do find, and I'm sure you all do too, is that most of my clients' assets are wrapped up in IRAs or small businesses.
Right.
So we have a whole other world of small business to talk about someday.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do small business work, so it's... I'm pointing at you.
Yes. was that for the tape recorder?
Yeah. Yes. That's a record show that I'm pointing at Joel. All right. And then, update the trust, but potentially consider another solution of the tax problem is to convert to Roth and take the tax penalty now, but make it a
control
different kind of asset.
Right.
And, of course, we're recommending people visit CPAs, financial advisors, because we don't know how to do this stuff. So. and don't forget to come back to your estate planning attorney or fix your trust.
Make sure the documents are
right.
Order.
Right.
No.
All right, so Joel.
So as we've been alluding to, the Roth conversions, those have always been something that I have planned around. Now I think it becomes even more important because of this 10-year rule. So, you know, the fact that you don't have to take it out for 10 years, well, maybe during those first nine years, you convert, you know. And again, it does depend on the numbers and what the tax bracket is, you know. I mean, I did one for a client the other day, and... You know, to go from the 12% to 22% bracket, he had like $25,000 that he could still remain in the 12% bracket. And jumping from 12 to 22, that's a big jump. Mm-hmm. So if we can keep as much as possible in the 12, it's worth him taking out that $25,000 and rolling it over. Mm-hmm. You know, so I found it very useful before a client had to take their, started getting their Social Security. Like between 59 and a half and 65, their income may have been down, and it's a good time to take those conversions. Well, now this is an added aspect of it that comes into play. And then, of course, there's, you got folks, I'm sure, are familiar with the backdoor IRA, the backdoor Roth. I mean, so you may have some non-taxable conversions that come into play also. I'll tell you about it later.
Okay.
But you want to know, no, what all a backdoor Roth is if you have a high-income individual that can't make a deductible IRA contribution and is income out of a Roth IRA, you can make a non-taxable, a non-deductible regular IRA contribution and roll it to a Roth. Since you never took a tax deduction,
oh, sure,
it's all basis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's...
I've done that for years.
So,
hey, different name for you.
So I think the Roth conversions has going to become more important under this new law, yes.
Well, my strategy all along has been spend all the IRA and Roth money, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Right, right. The good thing about the Roths, I mean, you know, no tax ever. And there's no RMDs, there's no 10-year rule, there never was, you know. So, I mean, as soon as my son started working, I told him, anything you can put in your Roth, put it in the Roth. Pay the tax now, and don't worry about it when you get to 59 and a half, right?
Yes, and for some odd reason, I just want to point out that little Bitcoin logo showed up. That was not there in the first draft. But it gives me an opportunity to say that this firm has sort of a niche in Bitcoin management. So if you have clients...
I still don't understand it.
It's not on a paper ledger.
That's right.
Jared discussed that with me at length.
Yeah, Jared,
okay.
He mentioned it to me.
Yes.
We can go into length.
Jared, if you're listening to this tape recording...
Everybody's heard from you, Jared. Anyway, the reason I think it showed up is because I had, you know, I look at Bitcoin information, and so when PowerPoint said, oh, here's some great slide ideas with complete with little images and so on, it stuck it in there. I don't know. Anyway.
All right.
I think either one of us is going to...
Yeah, you can take this, Doug. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, I'm more familiar with life insurance.
Probably not. Point of we already talked about all this is that using the life insurance as a way to pay the taxes that you don't want to pay, because the only reason it's going to come up is if you're deceased. So life insurance is really a good solution. Some of my clients don't want to talk about estate planning, and they want to talk about life insurance even less.
Right,
but
right.
You know, but I think it's a useful thing to cover. So.
I can't tell you how many clients any new client that comes in, I ask them if they have their estate planning documents in order. Oh, yeah, it's on my list.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's...
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, and I require everybody that comes in to tell me who their financial advisor is. And they some of them try to make something up. But
their uncle.
Yeah. No, I do it myself.
Yeah.
I'm really good at it. Okay, sure. Well, actually, I'm considering how to do this, so let me know if there's a way to do it. Because I'd like to sort of have people go to a 1-hour meeting with a financial advisor, no cost, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is anyway, right? For you guys
right.
to advise for a new client or whatever. I'm not trying to take advantage of you.
No, that's right.
But right, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I keep trying to tell them it's no cost. In fact, I'll even pay for it. Because it just...
Yeah.
They don't want to go, but I don't know what they're worried about exactly, but I think...
I'm not comfortable sharing information with a stranger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah?
Yeah, but if I were
I'm
recommending you,
I mean,
you don't get any less strange, Brian.
I understand. No. I can't tell you that. No, that's the real reason.
I think if you pose it in a way that it's a bilateral interview, because they should be interviewing us as much as we're interviewing them.
Right.
Because we don't try to be everything to everybody, and we have ideal clients that we feel like we do better with, and the client needs to like us and trust us. But that first meeting is—it's a first date.
That's a great first date.
And it doesn't need to be more complicated than that. And I think that people feel a little bit more comfortable if you go in with that mentality rather than.
Good way to put it.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So, and then this was also talked about.
Also, yeah. So.
They're pretty much trying to restate things the same way multiple times. So we all figured it out.
Include the Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm. And the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we're doing. We're at the question slide, so we must be just. Look at that. Perfect timing. So any more questions you guys have?
On this or anything
we
else?
We sort of aim at these folks as being knowledgeable about everything, and that isn't always fair to skip over you guys. So what is there anything that I can help you with? First date.
Right.
My situation is my parents will have a decent estate. I have a sister who's mentally retarded, and so they've set up trusts, and I need to go back and make sure that now mom's trust is set up properly to make sure that my sister's provided for and that she doesn't get bit. I'm not sure at this point what's funding the trust. I don't remember, so I need to figure that out and make sure that she won't get bit by a few things.
Yeah.
It sounded real good at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the time it might have been good.
Right.
There's all kinds of pitfalls too, because there's social security disability requirements, or and then there's also Medicaid. There's the trust really help in protecting the assets coming to somebody with special needs that will not disqualify them from the government assistance.
As well.
Yes,
right. Oh, that's critical. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you think you're giving this great gift to somebody,
right.
And then boom,
and
there goes their Medicaid, there
right.
goes all of their disability, and they're like, yeah, thanks so much.
And then they pay it all down, spend it all to get, and then they eventually get back on the public benefit, but meanwhile, all the money's gone.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of special needs trusts for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
There's separate trusts, special needs trusts, and there's also the ones contained in the trust or will documents, which are usually referred to as testamentary special needs trusts. For a person who's over the age of 65, the only way a special needs trust can be created is through a will. So sometimes you see these really weird wills where the trust exists, the will pours everything in the probate estate to the trust, and the trust says, oh, the person's over 65, pours it back to the will, creates special needs, and it's bizarre. But it's the way, like you said, the law gets passed, we find a way to work with it. So that question is very important for elderly people who are facing Medicaid, and I do a lot of Medicaid asset protection. It's equally important for young people or even grown adults who have mental challenges,
yes.
Right?
I like to think of myself as young.
Yeah. Well, you are. Compared to my clients, you're young.
That's all relevant.
That's right.
So, Joel, if I decide to take the rest of the year off and go flip houses.
Yeah.
Okay? Or maybe, you know, buy houses and fix them up and then rent them. Okay. Is that the income that I would realize from the rentals or the profit I would make on the homes, is that considered earned income and therefore I can deposit or make an IRA?
No, rental activities are labeled passive by nature. But if
however,
you're doing it a certain amount of hours, you can take the losses against other income.
However, if you created an LLC and paid yourself a salary from the LLC,
you can't pay a salary from an LLC.
You can elect to be an S-corp.
Yeah.
So LLC, treat it as S-corp, pay yourself a salary.
That's a lot of rigmarole.
But I can solve this problem. Do you know what
my fees? And that's one of the things talking to clients is, you know, look, you can be an S corp. That'd be great. You'd be paying me fees to do the tax return. You don't need it.
What he's thinking of doing is doing a 1-2 punch, and that is to client. We were just talking about this the other day. Of like, so taking this year off, working on these houses, and at the same time, because he's going to have, in his mind, no earned income, he wants to do a complete Roth conversion on his IRA.
Now that he has no income.
Right. Yeah, well, see now, if this, there's a little gray area here. Because if he's taking time off and he's building houses, then that could be a business. Mm-hmm. And then the income could be subject to IRAs and et cetera.
So make it a C Corp instead, and then declare a dividend, but a small one.
Wow.
Yeah.
C Corp.
I'm telling you, I can solve this problem.
Everybody's in the Three Stooges. In that bathroom, you know. Oh, these pipes have wires in them. You built this big Rube Goldberg. You know,
yeah. Going to require a few signatures.
That's right.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, this is a very fascinating industry because, I don't know, I get clients coming in with the most bizarre, you know, questions like, hey, what if I, you know?
Oh, and I've been doing this for a lot of years,
mm-hmm.
and still people hit me with questions that, my God, I never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch it. Am I sharing what you guys do?
I teach at Wake Tech.
Oh, okay.
What do you teach?
Medical laboratory technology.
Oh.
Lobotomy. That's
creepy. All right. Your
name tag. Yeah. Well, see, I go over to Wake Med some too, so, but I'm a medical technologist.
Oh, very nice.
So I teach lab work.
How long have you been teaching?
32 years.
Wow.
That's a lot of people trying to stick a lot of people.
Yeah. that's kind of like I do that a little bit
okay.
here. Most of it is microbiology.
Oh, that's good. I guess. Mm-hmm. Depends what.
Coronavirus.
Yeah, except for doing that part. Yeah.
Well, we don't do many viruses when it's in a bacteria.
I saw something on Facebook where someone said, I'm handling the coronavirus problem, and he showed him pouring Corona beer down the drain. Oh, no. Get rid of all
that's
the
alcoholics.
And how about you, sir?
I have a video production company.
Okay.
Over in Cary. I used to be a CPA.
Were you really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, cool.
And you saw the light and you realized you were perfect.
Just I've been in financial stuff for about 27
okay.
years.
Okay.
You know,
different.
Yeah. Even anyone, any like even my grandson going to college, I would advise him to take some accounting course because
right.
no matter what you do in your life, at some point, you're going to need to understand financial information. And that's one thing I'm pretty strong about. I mean, the Chappahoochee Chamber, which I've been on the board for like 10 years, we just came up with these three bold ideas. We asked the community. We got 500 ideas. We had 200 community members get together and cull those ideas down to three.
Wow.
That's
and
it's
like, we got in, I'm in this room, and I'm like, how are they going to do this? They did it. And one of them is that No Child Left Behind, that every third grader knows how to read and shrink the gap. And, you know, because there's no financial literacy taught to kids in school today.
Right. Well, now it's required in North Carolina High School.
It is. Oh,
yeah.
That's good
so
to hear.
They just started that this
good.
Year where it's
good.
Required.
Good.
So my kids skated on that. Yeah. I got a 6-year, well, he gets an education at home, but on the financial side, but definitely it's something that is good to be reinforced at school. And for a lot of people, a lot of kids, it's the only education they get on finances.
You know, it's like somebody said before. I mean, my dad never talked to me about finances because you don't know your kids about your money.
Right. Because I'll go live and tell everybody.
That's
all
right.
Neighbors.
Yeah.
Teachers and stuff.
Well, what kid listens to the parents is trying to get
that's true.
Tell them it's important and they'll just completely forget
that's
everything you said. Yeah.
That's funny because my parents used to let us sit in their financial advisor meetings and they're like, now you just listen and you don't share a word, but just listen and kind of
That's great.
That's
good. That's good, yeah.
That is good, yeah.
But this is good for me to hear, too. So.
Yeah. Well, they need to teach us in law school. No lawyers know anything about finance. Unless they learn it some other way, but not because they went to law school.
Or doctors.
Mm-hmm. No, doctors. No one knows how to run a practice. They teach you how to do whatever the thing is.
They should be part of your business school. Yeah.
Right, they don't teach you about business or anything.
Well, that's kind of like I had a chef in Florida who was an amazing chef. He didn't know how to order food. He didn't know how to manage people. He didn't know how to buy insurance. I mean, you know, it's the difference between...
Gordon Ramsay talks. My daughter's been known to play with her.
Well,
the good daughter.
Well, my father was a CPA, my mother was a bookkeeper, so...
Oh, God, you got
the parties you guys
have. I manage an irrevocable, catastrophic illness trust that my father set up the day before he died. just trying to figure out how to sell the property so I can get out of that. I'll be trustee forever, I don't know how to get out of it, so until we sell the property. So, but I'm just trying to learn something.
Sure.
Well, my only question about the SECURE Act is that, so they give you 2 more years, and then probably they jack the prices up, like, so you're still paying the tax rates on the R&Ds will probably be higher. You see what I mean? Like, you're not going to really...
Because you're having to take more each year, so your income is higher, so your tax rate's higher. Exactly right.
Right, so they're going to get it back. They're just letting you have 2 years. You think you're going to coast, or, you know, like start accumulating more, and then they're going to tax it at a higher rate when you find.
Right, right.
So it doesn't sound like it's all that big a benefit.
Are they changing the tables of the magic numbers that happen with the RMD calculations at all?
Uniform lifetime tables?
Right, are those changing as well? Are they lengthening that time frame out? Or?
You know, I don't know. I didn't think so. I haven't heard anything about that, and I've been doing a lot of research and reading.
So I'm wondering, is it Gene?
Yes.
To your point, they give us 2 more years to save. Our pool is larger, therefore, theoretically speaking, where RMDs be larger?
Theoretically, yeah, because you got a bigger pool that you got to take on.
Yeah.
Yep.
So this is all for the IRS.
Of course it is.
Right, but it sounded like, I've got 2 years, I don't have to worry about it. I can accumulate more money before I have to start taking it out. So it sounded like a really good thing, but then I'm thinking,
it sounds more like
it's going to be a wash. I think it's going
to
be a wash.
It's our 70s just to pay for the taxes. So we're able to then recontribute to those.
Look, I've been doing this long enough that, you know, they give it, then they take it away. Yeah. The IRS.
Right.
You know, it's, nothing is free, you know. And unfortunately, the IRS needs money. I mean,
government needs money.
They are so understaffed and overworked.
Well, I like them when they're that way, though.
No, you're right. Yeah, to a certain extent. Except it bothers me when people tell me things they do that they shouldn't be doing, you know. Because I try to...
That makes you keep them groggy and tired, you know.
That's right. They're not going to honor
those. Conscious enough to answer, ask any questions.
Right. Well,
that's still groggy and tired. You stay here pretty late.
That's funny. I had a CPA many years ago who was reviewing returns for me, and he had his own practice in the 40s. And he said he had an IRS agent come to his client once and says, listen, I have 3 weeks left to retirement. Let me sit here for 3 weeks. I'll give you a reasonable audit, and then I'm done.
Okay.
It's like, that's how things were done back then.
I had some employees like that. I totally understand.
Well, thank you to the both.
Yeah.
Nice to meet you all.
Yes.
I just showed up because Eventbrite said this would be interesting for you. And I'm like, it's tomorrow, it's
was
free,
it
I'm
was
going.
It was it interesting?
Yeah, it was interesting. I mean, I always learn a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so I listen to y'all talk about finances. Maybe y'all, something probably rubbed off. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. I see like you. Did I go to one of your talks?
I used to consult for
Was it at Jordan
Hospital? I went to one at Jordan Hospital. Are you familiar with them? They work with
them.
Yes,
I am.
I
remember somebody told me once a long time ago that in life you can have two out of three things, a house, children, and financial independence.